Mini episode 402 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
30 seconds.
In front of all these people, you're going to pull out a gun and you're going to shoot an unarmed man.
20 seconds.
So what are you going to do? 10.
Welcome to the FDH Lounge and the Justified episode recap.
It was justified.
With your original dignitaries.
Fire in the hole!
Rick Morris and Jason Jones.
That ice cold water running through your veins.
Breaking down each Justified episode the moment they've concluded.
Did you take a peek inside the soul of Raymond Newton?
I'm just gonna let that old dog lie.
Real-time reactions. Next level analysis.
You seem to be harboring a bit of hostility there, brother.
So I've been told.
And now, your dignitaries.
Well, I believe we can take her from here.
Welcome, everyone, to mini episode number 402 of the FDH Lounge. You have FDH Lounge original dignitaries Rick Morris and Jason Jones here to break down episode 5.12 of Justified, the penultimate episode of season 5. A lot of developments tonight, building off of a strong 5.11, I thought, and really, tonally, maybe two-thirds of the way through what I think could be considered a three-part season finale. These three seem to be really kind of joined at the hip. We'll see how it plays out next week. I really thought that we started to get to the finale of the season last week with the attempted assassination of Art Mullen and everything kind of flowing from there. We'll see what Jason thinks. Jason, good to have you on, my man. Your thoughts initially on 5.12?
It seems like every week we start out the same way. There's a great deal of importance, and I want to sort of echo your sentiment on the hypothesis of a three-part finale, which is crazy since it's, you know, only so many episodes long to begin with. But there's something to that because they almost feel like what seems like two to this point and probably three different chapters of the same sort of story. And as I'm watching this, I keep coming back to this feeling of, we go back. There's been a sense that episodes are either great or not great, and that's really the end all be all. And I'm watching this, and I think I get the impression that the people that don't find some of these episodes to be really, really great are like the people that watch football, but only care when the ball carrier crosses the end zone. There's so many things that have to happen before that happens. And what we're seeing now is the result of so many things. Let me just jump to the very end real fast, and then I'll let you work, do what you do and work us back in. When we get to that last scene, right before Raylan walks away, and he says what he says, to elicit, well, I guess Vasquez is the one that says it, but then Raylan takes responsibility for saying what he says, to get Alicia Witt's character to lose it and sort of jump out of her chair and scream no. You don't know what that is unless we've seen every single thing that leads up to it. So as we said weeks ago, these episodes that may not feel phenomenal are going to build to something. And I think what we're seeing today and last week, and I hope if things progress the way we believe they will, the very next week is all going to be a result of this journey we've been on. So my answer to your question of what's my reaction is I think we're in the midst of something beautiful right now. I think we may have sat through an episode that had no gunfire, had no real action to speak of, but was absolutely critical.
It was. And I think one of Boyd's thugs might care to differ as far as the gunfire as his leg took a shot there. But I know what you mean. Nobody died. There was no shots to the dome or anything like that. And you're absolutely right, I think, in how you're breaking it down. Wendy Crowe, the only thing that makes me wonder about that at the end is This is the leverage to get her to turn on Darryl Crowe Jr., her brother. Having said that, her attitude has hardened towards Raylan as his has hardened towards her during the season. And the Crowes have kind of thrown at his feet, "You killed our brother." Really, it was his own stupidity with the 21-foot rule, but they were going to have a duel, and in all likelihood, Raylan was going to kill him anyways. So I wonder about that part. And again, Raylan is not always the most adept person socially, and I just wonder about the notion of him taking full responsibility for Kendall being tried as an adult, because she doesn't need one more reason to view him, I think, unjustly as being a real bad guy who's just out to persecute the family. So her motherly instincts towards Kendall and wanting to save him may yet be thwarted by spite. Wendy Crowe is a character, as we've seen, driven in large part by spite. Jason?
I can't really dispute any of that. But a part of me, maybe a recent part of me, just doesn't buy the hardening aspect. And I don't mean to argue your point, but if she really is this mother, this parental figure who's been along the whole way and just recently has decided to formally take ownership of that idea, but if she's that person and always has been, she'll sell Darryl in a heartbeat. I know I would. One other quick thing I just wanted to throw in as a sidebar on the whole Danny Crowe issue. And this I have a problem with on every level. Like, I hate when you're watching, a mob movie and somebody dies. Let's say character A kills character B, but character B was the one that started it. And then character A's family comes back and says, "Now we're going to kill one of you." No, we wouldn't be here if you didn't start this. Danny Crowe has been trying to get at the marshal the entire time. Danny Crowe falls on his own knife. That's his own fault. We can argue semantics till we're blue in the face. Yes, there was a standoff, but ultimately Danny killed himself, and the Crowes should just suck it, basically. But I do think that there's some issue, between all these people, primarily Raylan, Wendy, Darryl. But I think what's so beautiful about that moment is today, right now, you may be right. There may be sort of a three-way standoff between saving Kendall, turning on Danny, or sticking it to Raylan. And in that case, any one of those three things can win out. I think ultimately, sort of in the way that Boyd is trying to paint this picture that he just wants to walk away from everything at a fresh start, I think if Wendy is told that she does the right thing and her and Kendall leave this situation and may never see any of the other Crowes again, but they're free and clear, I think she's going to jump at it. And that comes from a parental instinct that even I can't fathom.
Let me ask you about that. You mentioned Boyd wanting a clean start, and that's something fascinating as we, again, look towards this season. It's an interesting position to be in talking about this tonight. We're in the penultimate episode of the penultimate season because you and I have spent a good part of the season looking ahead to next year and where they're going to be going, what the arcs are going to be at the very end of the series. So for Boyd to say he wants a clean slate and that he now seems resigned to being without Ava, we saw him make no gestures in her direction tonight. That sets up an interesting thought going forward into next year. We'll be no doubt be carrying this into 2015, trying to puzzle through the motivations and the possible arc of Boyd Crowder. I just want to ask you this, though. What the marshals were using tonight to squeeze him and get his cooperation, this file that's there on him, I don't doubt that there is one. I mean, they even had an informant earlier in the year, Wade Messer, that was, again, brought up tonight as Dewey Crowe inadvertently copped to killing him. But that file and the different times that they've wanted to squeeze Boyd one way or another, is it a little bit of deus ex machina to bring the thing out now? We've had this file on you all along, and we've just decided to play it now. Really? You didn't want to squeeze him when you were looking for Drew Thompson and he had the Detroit Mafia working with him last year? I mean, I don't know. Am I nitpicking a little bit here, or did it seem like they might have kind of pulled that one out of their ass a little bit?
Well, I think the direct answer is yes, but the more thought-through answer would be, you know, it's a commonly used tool, you know, that writers will pull out, and sure, it fits their means now, and I guess they're probably hoping that no one's thinking about it the way you are, but at the end of the day, if this is a real U.S. Marshal Service and this is a real villain, so to speak, and this is not television, yeah, at any given point, you know, Deputy Raylan Givens comes to work and his boss says, hey, we've got all this stuff on Boyd. Let's just go get him. And, yeah, they probably can put, you know, 20 different charges together that add up to life in prison, or you wait and you see if you can't get him on something that puts him in life in prison on one charge. So, realistically, sure, it's a little strange that they decided to wait till now. However, if it was just like, hey, here's this file, and then they walk away from it and nothing happens, yeah, it was kind of a cheesy little ploy. I think what's more likely is it'll come into play next week, or if it doesn't come into play next week, it'll be a major, major detail for season six. With all that said, the interesting thing there was how it seems like the rest of the team kind of jumped to Raylan's defense on the Augustine issue, which I don't think is necessarily true. So that may not be over either. And one other real quick thing, you started this off by saying how Boyd was sort of non-reactionary to the Ava thing, and Ava pretty much didn't give a hoot about Boyd. I'm not sold on that. I'm also not sold on the idea that this is what we're given at face value. There's been a few times now where something happens with Boyd and we think that he's up a creek and then all of a sudden he turns the tables. I would not be surprised if they're leaving some stuff out so that we can find something teased for next season or that starts next season. I don't believe that Boyd and Ava just walk away, you know, clean break just that easy. I think there's something going on there that they're not telling us.
And that very well may be the case, but I want to get to something here. Last week I threw in something about The Good Wife because it was very topical vis-a-vis Justified. They had a very shocking character death on the show there, right about at the time, of course, that Art Mullen had the attempted assassination on this show. And we talked about that a little bit as far as shocking character deaths and everything like that. By the way, spoiler alert for everyone out there, Grammio's publicly announced that, again, don't know if we'll see Art back in the office, but those were not kill shots on Art Mullen last week. So we can all breathe a little bit easier as far as how that goes. Grammio's publicly, and it's an unusual thing they said that, and just to calm everyone's nerves. We talked a little bit about that and how they approached it versus The Good Wife. I want to bring up something else that's topical, and that being How I Met Your Mother. And I don't know if this is a show that you've watched, Jason. I've only ever caught bits and pieces of it on reruns. I'm familiar with it. I've enjoyed the bits and pieces I've seen, but never been compelled to watch much more than that. It's very much in the headlines today because of its series finale and the fact that they went in a direction where the writers really painted themselves into a corner on what they were going to do, and that they were going to throw a massive curveball at the end, a huge curveball. I guess I won't say anything more than that in case anybody doesn't want to be spoiled. But it's something that almost undercuts the entire premise of the series. Then they wrote themselves into a corner in season two, I guess, in retrospect, and filmed some things at the time of season two that they just unveiled in the finale. And they've been planning it all this time, and they wrote themselves into a corner having done that. The criticism that I've had this year, relatively mild criticism, especially compared to some people, season five of Justified, you put your finger on it last week. This is a very non-linear season, probably the most non-linear season we've had of this show. I think maybe they've been too scared to write themselves into a corner. There has to be a happy medium. They've left it open. We've been saying for a while, boy, anything can sure happen. And you know what? And episodes 11, 12, and 13 are setting up for a nice, as we said earlier, three-part finale. But I almost wonder if it's a little bit of cheating because they left themselves open to go in so many places. You start with the shooting of Art Mullen last week. Okay, and that really sets up this entire end game. But I'm still kind of unclear as to how that came about and how it was part of the grand plan of Darryl Crowe, and maybe it'll be revealed next week. Maybe it'll make more sense to me after it's all said and done. But there's so many things, Jason, that happened that, again, the nonlinear fashion of this season, I think they may have gone to the other extreme as to How I Met Your Mother, folks. Because, you know, you have to commit to something. You have to throw a few more breadcrumbs, I think, while you're doing it, as opposed to at the end, oh, look and see where the breadcrumbs were. You know, take our word for it.
Well, we could have a whole other How I Met Your Mother conversation, and I am not up to the current with everyone else that's just saw the finale and has seen it all. I've seen maybe 15 episodes total. I will say, if you ever get the opportunity, you should absolutely watch Girls vs. Suits, which is an episode which is phenomenal, musical number and the whole bit. It's a fun show, but I don't know about sitting through 9 seasons or whatever it was. Anywho, that putting that on the back burner and understanding that they, in theory, because I don't know the specifics, painted themselves into a corner or wrote themselves into a corner, I think we're seeing something different here. This is sort of a glimpse into my optimism as someone who has some vague familiarity with a writing process and what it takes to sort of see the whole image and then know how they do it industry-wide and then know how it's done a different way. And let me just jump into a real quick sort of comic book superhero movie approach. There's this interesting idea. There was a special recently where the people at Marvel illuminated that Iron Man was just supposed to be a movie to see if they could do it. They had no intention of doing Avengers. And then as some pieces came into place, they saw Avengers developing. Now, the difference is, once they saw Avengers, they pretty much conceptualized the whole thing. They're going to start shooting Avengers 2 in a few weeks. And rest assured that Avengers 1, 2, and 3 pretty much was written by the time they started shooting Avengers 1. And I say all of that just to say this. I agree with what you're saying, and it makes perfect sense that maybe they're a little afraid or maybe they didn't want to do this or do that. But what I think has happened here is whether it had anything to do with the creator dying or if it was something that the creator put in place and they've just sort of carried the baton, I get the impression that once we got into this season and realized that it wasn't linear and that it was a completely different feeling thing, I immediately got the impression that I bet they've already written season 6. I bet that at this point they already know what's going to happen and now we're just filling in the blanks. I'd be really surprised if whatever happens next week ends and then there's this idea that they're going back to work to write out where it goes from here. I think they already know where it goes. I think they know where it ends and I think they know all the details in between. So in a sense, maybe when they came up with the idea, they were writing themselves into a corner, but I believe they've got everything already figured out. So, if anything, the conclusion is what the conclusion is. Whether we agree that it's the right one or not, I think it's already concluded.
That's a fascinating dichotomy then between me and you, and I will be very, very, very intrigued to see how this plays out because, you know, based on my question to you, you can tell I have a little bit of doubt that they even knew where they were going all the way through season 5. It has almost felt to me from time to time, I don't want to say making it up as they were going along, that's harsh, but the notion that they may not have even had a full season outline when they started the thing here, which again sounds ludicrous, and as much faith as I have in them, again, I would find that very, very hard to believe. But
and Rick, here's the thing, though.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing with that, and I absolutely understand. And when this is all over, we may have a conversation that says, yeah, I was completely wrong about that, clearly. But I think as we've grown through this, season 1 was your typical, this is the kind of thing that we do. Let's learn about these people. Let's figure out how they do their job and so on. And then we build. And we get to season two, which everyone pretty much universally loved. But you could get the impression that, yeah, they sat together. They got the lady that plays Mags Bennett. And they're like, here's what we can do. And you got the impression that it grew week to week. And then we get to season four, which was different but still kind of followed the same blueprint. And it just felt like everything, whether built or not, you could imagine the writer's room like figuring this whole thing out and telling the story. It's just that this one was so much different, and the way we're seeing last week's episode, this week's episode, sort of playing off of each other, it just feels to me more like that sort of superhero movie idea where they're telling a story, and we may not like every bit of it, but it all contributes to the same end, which is why I think what I do. Now, like I said, I could be completely wrong, but it just feels like it's such a departure from seasons 1 through 4 that there's got to be a bigger master plan to it, at least in my head.
Well, and again, you are the person in FDH, especially among the leadership of it, that has the very, very strong comic book background here. So that's something you bring to the table, and your understanding of that, that makes me feel a little bit better if they're borrowing from a trope there. Because I was thinking to myself, I did remember reading Graham Yost and some of the other folks from the show talking about a fear that they had written themselves into a corner in season four with the whole Drew Thompson thing. They were initially going to introduce Drew Thompson as one of these swells from Clover Hill, and they introduced that entire storyline, which I'm pretty happy is in the rearview mirror, quite frankly, because I didn't think it felt as much a part of the show as some of the other things. Didn't feel as organic. You and I have covered that and the notion of Millionaire's Row in Appalachia really being a made-up kind of a thing here. But that they decided on the direction to go with Sheriff Shelby, which you and I loved, just selfishly, because you and I are big Jim Beaver guys, not just from this show, but you love him from Supernatural. I love him from Deadwood. We both love him from Breaking Bad and his brief moments on there. And it worked out for the best. But the fear on their part that, oh, gee, did we do enough things earlier on that would have ruled him out from being Drew Thompson? And that could get to be sort of a crippling kind of a fear, if it's a sense that you've ruled out a certain direction here. I do think the way that they're going now, though, as much as you and I are going to differentiate season five from the other seasons of Justified, I did think tonight, and I was taking some notes here during the finale for the episode for our conversation, that my primary note along those lines was, this felt like the culmination of seasons 2 and 3. Maybe not so much 4. 4 was a little bit different because Decoy, not Convoy, as I have called it in the past, and tricked you into calling it, Decoy was really the sort of finale, and then you had a couple-part kind of denouement from there. And it really worked well how they did it. It didn't feel anticlimactic at all. But 2 and 3 built up strong to the end. Versus tonight, you really kind of had that feel that although the season as a whole has been much different, here at the end, it feels like 2 and 3, and that's a good thing because just look at the different angles. You've got the cartel versus Boyd and Wynn, and they've certainly had their own troubles between them, especially last week, versus Darryl Crowe Jr., kind of a triple threat, as they might say in wrestling. You've also got the Marshals pursuing their angles with Darryl Crowe, trying to play Boyd and Wynn off against Darryl. You've got Dewey and Ava as the wild cards, the conversations between Ava and Raylan as far as Raylan trying to flip her and get her to be cooperative in this matter, and then Dewey. It's just a man who exemplifies the term wild card at all times, breaking up that drug deal in there and, again, forcing it to go the way that it did at the end where they're having to throw the Hail Mary on really throwing the book at Kendall because that's the only card left to play against the Crows to try to squeeze them at this point. With all the different angles coming together, it does feel like the multi-sided kind of deal that we had at the end of season 2 and the end of season 3, where you had different factions of bad guys going up against one another, law enforcement with Raylan and some of the other parties in the mix. You know, we didn't get there in the same way, but at the end, it sure feels the same, doesn't it? And that's a good thing.
There's quite a few things to take from that, and the first thing I want to jump in on is the line that Dewey, as he's getting in the cop car, Raylan says, "You should probably start by not speaking in the third person. Makes you look foolish." And then you see you see Dewey in the back seat looking very confused, and then says, "What, this guy?" Like, pointing to the third guy in the car. Like, Dewey is not only a wild card, he may be the dumbest character ever put on television that is nonfiction in, you know, reality-wise. Let's exclude reality TV and nonfiction. Dewey Crow may be the dumbest, most ignorant, and to his own detriment and the detriment of others, that I've ever seen, which is beautiful. It's beautiful to watch unfold. But here's the thing. As you're saying all those details that we've just seen and talking about the way that 2 and 3 ended and how 4 ended and how it looks like 5 is going to end, here's the thing, and this may sound like I'm telling you 1 plus 2 equals cow dung, but this whole time we've been talking about how 1, 2, 3, and even 4 to some level have been kind of linear, and then this is just one big cluster F that we can't really put our finger on. But when you started spitting off some of those details, season 1 is more or less Bo Crowder and Boyd Crowder, if I'm remembering this correctly, and feel free to jump in and correct me if I'm wrong on any of this. 2 is the Bennett family. 3 was sort of like a three-way thing. You know, you had Danny Crow, or Dewey Crow, and then the Holler. I can't remember the guy's, Limehouse. Then we get to 4, and 4 kind of changes. Power. Right. 4 changes a little bit, because now we've got outsiders coming in, and you've got, like, basically 3 different main things happening, and it ends with the whole Nicky Augustine bit, and then we're coming in to 5, and now we've got Danny Crow, Wendy Crow, Boyd Crowder, the Mexicans, Picker. I guess what I'm getting at is, although we feel that amidst the moment, this is so completely different, doesn't it really seem, when you step back from it, that from the beginning to where we are now is building in almost a mathematical slope to this great, massive, epic, large conclusion that we'll see this time next year, and it's really not that crazy?
I think that's a very good point that you raise. And again, a lot of what they're doing now, they're throwing things in there that build on the continuity from throughout the season. The only thing that I had questioned before, however insane it might sound, for as much as I respect them and for as much as I can't believe in any way that the process has been anything less than completely genius, because that almost seems like heresy to talk about with this show, but it almost seems like they're going back now and picking things out from before, and let's put this in there to make it look like we had this plan all along, because again...
Sure.
It seems like the first 10 episodes, in a way, are divorced from the last 3. There's going to be enough continuity. There's going to be enough things of, oh, well, this builds off of something we did at the time. And, again, maybe I'm just chasing a point here that may or may not make much sense, and I'm not sure we'll ever know the answer to the question, but in terms of how much of this was planned all along, because the last 3 episodes, I think, are going to be genius. The first 2 of the 3-part finale, as we've been calling it, have been. And it looks like it's setting up to be a classic Justified ending. I mean, I am really digging this right now. The last 2 weeks, I've really felt like how I haven't felt like for a good part of the season, and how I have felt throughout most of the previous seasons. So we're getting there. I just think, in a way, this is going to affect how I rank the season as a whole, because, you know, season 4, I felt this way most of the way through the season. Ditto with season 3. Season 2, I started watching it in real time halfway through, caught up on it afterwards. So that was a little bit of a different experience. In season 1, I caught up on completely after the fact. But I just wish I'd had this feeling all the way through season 5. That's just my idealism coming to play, because I love this show so much. You know, I keep saying this. That's the standard that I hold it to. I wouldn't be sounding nearly as critical if I didn't think this was one of the greatest TV dramas of all time.
Well, here's a great thought to go along with what you're saying. And you and I have tons of conversations that, you know, unfair to the listening public isn't being recorded. But if we take a moment, let's just say for the sake of discussion, there are 65 episodes by next week, just because it mathematically makes it easier. Now, if there's 65 episodes in five seasons, and we were to go back and break down every segment, every piece of writing they've ever done to this point, I think you and I could probably get on board with the idea that if you rewrote everything retroactive, that you could write the entire first five seasons in, let's say, 55 episodes. You know, some of the stuff is, it feels forced, it feels like it's not necessary, and now that we know where everything's going to go, we can sort of pick and choose what's critical. And I've mentioned before that, you know, episodes 2 through 6 of season 1 are absolutely unnecessary to anyone who's been watching the whole way. You don't need that, but you needed it to get to where we are. And some of these episodes of this season, there were entire segments I thought were not really necessary, and I still feel weren't necessary. Some of that goes back to that one episode that we have rehashed over and over again that most thought wasn't great, and you could probably take 10 or 15 minutes out of that episode and kill the rest of it. But I think the point here is if we were to rewrite everything and shave some stuff off, you could. And I don't think it affects where you'd be today. But to echo your sentiments, what we've seen build over time from the guy from Ferris Bueller as the killer dentist guy all the way up to watching Picker explode where he sat in a hotel room is a progression, and we had to get there somehow, albeit not everything was 100% crucial, but what is left is the creation of this expectation that you and I share that in the last 10 years, I think we can agree that there's been a boom in quality dramatic television. And that said, including shows like Mad Men, like Breaking Bad, like a number of these things that win Emmys after Emmys, is that Justified is probably in the top three in a renaissance reboom that we're in right now. And that expectation comes honestly, and it comes from the progression we've sat through. You can nit and pick all you want. It's still a phenomenal show, and we have a certain expectation for it, but there's a reason for that.
Yes, yes. And I like to consider us intellectually honest fanboys about this. We are not completely uncritical fanboys. We've pointed out where if we think somebody has kind of stepped on Superman's cape in terms of putting the show together this season, we've pointed that out and continue to do so. Before we go full circle here at the end, I had promised you in a text back and forth here I would put this out there for you to pontificate on. Ava sounding a little bit like a feminist icon there in prison tonight, channeling her inner Gloria Steinem, as it were. You had mentioned a couple episodes back you were hoping not to see that. I could almost hear the molars grinding from Colorado all the way out to Ohio here.
You and I had a conversation when I first started watching this show about, you know, is the Ava versus Winona thing. And I've been an Ava person the whole way. And then, but still, it's just like, okay, she's one of the girls that sort of gets in the way of Raylan doing his job. And as we went along the way, you know, the thing with Boyd grew and grew and grew. And then she goes to prison. And I'm thinking, okay, there's some interesting things happening here. I like the haircut. I like the idea that she's probably going to get a little hardened, just a little bit. What we saw today is sort of a transformation of Ava that you sort of forecast, and I was hoping was not going to be the case. I have no problem with her being a hardened female who survives prison to whatever end that is. I don't want her to become, you know, as we mentioned last week, I don't want her to be number one broad on the block sort of thing, and I definitely don't want her getting preachy. And the whole feminist thing about going back to high school and how women are fighting over boys like dogs and scraps or whatever it was, a little bit much. Now, maybe she's doing what she's got to do to survive in a bad situation. But what they're painting Ava to become, I'm really not crazy about, unless it is within itself, going back to season one, seeing her killing her husband and the little, you know, sunflower that she was, becoming what she is now. This is one big evolution, and that's a huge storyline that'll take place in season 6 where we see her really do some stuff, then maybe this is necessary. But as of right now, I wasn't really excited about what I saw from Ava tonight.
I can understand that. I think we can all understand that. In our tiny moments remaining, I will say that we are, of course, looking forward to the season finale next week and the last of what will be our recap slash reviews for the season. But again, much as we started the season with an overall preview before episode one, next week won't be the end for us. We will take whatever period of time we think we need to take our breath, whether it be a couple of days, whether it be a week, whatever the case may be. We will deliver a season in review mini-episode of the FDH Lounge where we try to sum this whole thing up, where we take the distance of having seen it all, process it, like I said, for whatever period of time that may be, a couple days, a week, maybe even 10 days, whatever we deem appropriate. So our analysis goes beyond next week, and I know that we'll be looking forward to doing this again next season. I can't believe we're already talking in those terms. I can't believe there's only one to go, Jason. But I'm really looking forward to it. We said it needed to pick up at the end, and it has. I know you're as geek as I am about next week.
Yeah, real quick, Sean Casey, friend of the product here, was on Seth Meyers, so everyone should go check that out. Very funny interview, as was Mr. Raylan Givens himself, and there's a nice little Justified promotion they're doing that you should check it out on the old interwebs.
Awesome. We'll have to check that out. And again, thank you all for tuning in, everybody, to mini episode number 402 of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.